This podcast contains swearing and occasional disturbing content.
I don't need to live in this physical realm. I walk around in the physical realm. In the spiritual world is where I live. I exist in places you never even dreamed of. Strange.
Hello and welcome to the High Strangeness podcast, episode 55.
Well done.
My name is Gam.
My name's Sarah.
Welcome back. Welcome for the first time.
Yep.
We are here to talk about a horrible man.
We are.
This one's a bad one. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good, I'm fine.
How's
as well.
Things with you?
Yeah, great. I hope everybody in the world, you are all happy, you listeners. I hope you're all good and nothing horrible is happening in the world, especially stuff like this character.
Yes, let's hope not.
He's not a bit of a hard one to look at a little bit. You were saying it's a bit of a thing.
It's been quite tricky. It's been quite hard to do the research because there's not really a great deal known about him. You know, if you kind of mention his name, I would say, obviously, people who are super into true crime will know him. You know, but on the whole, he's not as well recognised as, like, obviously Dahmer, Gacy, Bundy, that kind of ilk of people. You know, so yeah, it's a bit of a kind of side character, I suppose, if you like.
Yeah.
Which is weird, though, considering he was one of the inspos for Buffalo Bill.
With the dude with the little tunnel with the lady in it.
Jane Gumm in the film Silence of the Lambs keeps the women in the pit.
Because this is what we're going to find out today, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't know of this particular person, this is basically his MO. But this case is crazy. I was going to do a bit of research. I struggled to find really any documentaries or anything on this character, which is funny. Why have Netflix not jumped all over this?
Well, yeah, I was going to get a book, and I obviously read the book for the research and stuff. I tried to get one, but it was... could only get one from America. Could only get a book coming from America. So I was like, but obviously it was Christmas coming up, and I thought by the time, you know, I've bought one, the post and...
We had postage strikes.
We'll be doing this. So yeah, it's pointless, which is a bit annoying. But yeah, I personally couldn't find one in the UK to buy. So yeah, it's quite weird.
A surprise it's not really been covered that much. I'm imagining at some point someone will jump all over this, then it'd be hashtag da 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 and the dude would be spoke about lots.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's just weird though, isn't it?
If people were going to get on it, they would have got on it by now.
Again though, I think it's because he probably didn't have a call, I put that with fingers in the air, a serial name.
Yeah.
Like the police or the press, or the killers themselves sometimes get coined with these, you're Jack the Ripper, perfect example.
Definitely. You know. Or Richard Ramirez, there's Screen Door Intruder, or fucking Night Stalker.
There's so many things like that. But I feel like this is almost, it's like when I say to you, like, some horror movies, why didn't this get better, slasher movies in the 80s? Oh, because it didn't have, like, the signature theme tune or the chick-chick-ah-ah or whatever. Do you know what I mean? All these little bits and bobs.
Yep.
But yeah, he didn't have the name, and I feel like it's such a weird one. But this guy is fucking, this story is insane.
So frightening.
But it's insane that he's super intelligent, dude. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, it's just like, you know, like, what the fuck?
Yeah, definitely. Well, as we go through the story, you know, and obviously, we'll chat about it as we go, but just kind of on the outset, you know, with what you're saying, obviously, we'll mention his IQ was like 148, an average is about 100. But at the same time, he did have a head injury when he was little.
Yeah.
And also kind of mental illness ran in his family as well. You know, his brother spent time in institutions.
And his mum
was mentally unwell as well.
So. And as we see with this guy, as he ages, I feel like the mental illness just...
Oh, I think it definitely gets a lot worse. Yeah, it definitely gets worse.
I think the lines of what's correct and what isn't just blow away. It's just like,
yeah, and I think that's kind of a thing as well, you know, It kind of ties in with religious mania as well, because obviously he had the church that he started and that kind of thing. Although it wasn't, I'm not going to mention a great deal of kind of religious stuff today, but I feel like once things get tied in with like religious mania, anything goes pretty much, you know, because you're kind of not, it's not you then who is making this stuff up, it's kind of coming from a power higher than you. So anything could happen then. So yeah, I think that always gets a bit scarier.
Yeah, indeed. So what's the guy's name? You obviously, all of you listeners know, because you've just downloaded the episode or streaming it. Who is this guy?
Yeah, it's Gary Heidnick.
But no, I was about to say, then waiting for the
yeah.
No, he doesn't have it.
I remember doing, I think it was Ramirez's, weren't it? Or it might have been that East Area Rapist, and they just had so many names.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, and this one, and this one, and
yeah.
About 10 different names. Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, this guy, I think he might have been known as Brother Heidnick.
Why is he not so well known?
Oh, pass. I don't know.
There's got to be some sort of reason.
I think it's
almost.
Potentially because he was never intentionally a murderer. He never set out to murder these girls. That wasn't his aim. You know, he wanted the children. He wanted the girls to stay alive.
He did. And this case is fucking full on. I just find it so weird that he isn't known.
Yeah.
I'm sure some of you hardcore listeners know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say a few people would know of him. But yeah, on the whole, he's quite an under the radar thing. So,
and it's just such a crazy. This is inspired a movie for that one scene. But I was saying this whole thing is just like a movie. It doesn't feel like it could be. It's almost, it's too far. Almost like that can't be real.
Yeah,
we know of all these serial killers want to get up to, but like this one can't be real. Like this, you know, it's craziness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get into it.
So, yeah. Okay. Cool. Rightio. Okay, so Heidnick was an American who kidnapped, raped and tortured 6 women, murdering 2, while keeping them captive in a pit in his basement in Pennsylvania. Okay, so this is like a statement from a pre-sentence report, so I thought I'd start with this.
And should we give a wee warning for this one?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, good call, yeah, well in. So yeah, trigger warnings, lots of like there's rape, there's lots of abuse, sexual abuse, kidnap,
torture,
murder.
Yeah,
I think that's it.
And all female victims.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, all female victims. It's not going to end well for some of them.
Absolutely not.
It's quite a harrowing tale. So if any of those things are going to upset you, you might want to skip this one because it's not pleasant.
It's crazy because I thought that it was a span of like a couple of days. Do you know what I mean? Because it's so crazy that he managed to get away.
Yeah,
it must be like just a week at the most. I mean, it's not that. It's a span of months.
It's quite a while. I can't remember it off the top of my head how long it was, but it's quite some time.
Yeah, captive.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I thought I'd start by reading this statement from a pre-sentence kind of psychiatric assessment of Heidnick after he was captured, you know, and I thought this would probably then give you a bit of an idea about his mindset, you know, and what was kind of going on with that, and then we'll go back to the beginning. Okay, so he appears to be an extremely insecure and confused individual. Records indicate he is suffering from an extreme form of mental illness, which appears to have been ongoing for some time. He is psychosexually immature and easily threatened by women of a similar intelligence. He cannot tolerate criticism and needs constant reassurance. He sees himself as superior to others and involves himself with people of a lower intelligence to reinforce this. It is my opinion that he is not only a danger to himself, but perhaps a greater danger to the community, especially those who he sees as weak and vulnerable.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like after they've caught him, you know, but I thought I'd give you a good idea of where he's coming from when it actually gets to what he does.
Yeah, because it's just a crazy old one, isn't it?
So Gary Heidnik was born on November 22nd, 1943, in Eastlake, Ohio, to Michael and Ellen Heidnik. His parents divorced when he was around 3 years old, and he and his younger brother Terry went to live with their mother for 4 years before going back to live with their father and his new wife. Heidnik later claimed that his father was physically and emotionally abusive during the time that he lived with him, and would become furious over Heidnik's bedwetting, making him hang the soiled sheets out of the window for the neighbours to see. After Heidnik's arrest, his father said that not only did he think that Heidnik should get the death penalty, but that he would gladly pull the switch himself.
Wow!
I know.
Thanks.
Yep. During his childhood, Heidnik fell from a tree, which gave him a permanently misshapen head and became the source of much bullying during his school years.
Was it like Dan Aykroyd and Coneheads?
Possible brain injury. You can see, if you have a look at the pictures on the socials that I put up, you can kind of see that his head does look a bit weird, but it's not like super bad.
Right.
Whether it was worse when he was a kid, maybe.
And obviously got pigs on.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Heidnik didn't socialise well at school either, and when one of his female classmates asked if he had managed to get the homework done, he shouted at her, telling her that she was not worthy to talk to him. Heidnik did...
That's some cold air shit right there.
Yeah, definitely.
You're not worthy to talk to me!
Yeah, totally. Crazy. Heidnik did much better academically, and when his IQ was tested, the result was 148, and like I said earlier, average is about 100. His father encouraged him to enrol at Staunton Military Academy in Virginia, and he was there for 2 years, leaving before graduation. He then spent some time at public school before dropping out and joining the army at 17. Heidnik served in the army for 13 months, and during basic training, his drill sergeant rated him as excellent. He applied for several specialised positions within the army, including military police, but he was rejected each time.
Why was...
I don't know. I haven't got any reason for him being rejected.
That's funny if his drill sergeant thought he was excellent.
Yeah, but I suppose like with specialised positions,
maybe it's the particular
like
positions
sergeant,
he's doing is a bit too far out of his
non-experience. Stuff like military police, you know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
It's not
whether,
that far out, though, is it?
I don't know. Maybe they have to have some different kind of psychiatric test that he didn't pass.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. So, went into the military for a bit. Okay, so, when did he have the head injury? How old?
Oh, he was quite young when he had that. He was still kind of like primary school
age. Yeah, because I know, because obviously before school, so he's quite young. Okay, so he's had it the whole time. But we've not had any real violent
situations, there's been no
animal cruelty, you know.
Yeah. I mean, there's the bedwetting, which is supposed to be part of the McDonald triad, which I think has actually been disproved now. You know, the bedwetting, arson... animal torture thing.
Not a McDonald's triad, which is like cheeseburger, nuggets, milkshake.
But yeah, there's been no...
Nothing yet. And he's gone to join the army. So to be fair, like, he's trying to be, you know...
Yeah.
Trying to be all right.
Yeah.
He's not gone to, like...
Well, this is it, you know.
Criminal behaviour.
No, but I think the thing with this is, like I was saying earlier, he's not...
He's not a murderer.
That was never the intention.
When the mental illness starts to break through,
mm-hmm.
and the wall breaks down.
Yeah, because we'll find in a bit, you know, he is suffering from kind of schizoid personality disorder, and schizophrenia generally tends to start coming through like late teenage, early 20s kind of time.
Right.
So, you know, it's not really developing yet, I suppose.
Hmm.
You know, if that's what it is, coming from that, it's not just a brain injury from the fall.
Yeah.
You know, I do think, like I said earlier, mental illness did run through his family anyway. So.
Yeah, totally. And it's a shame, like, at no point anyone's noticing or, like you know, the behaviours to the point, like, you need to go get some medication or...
Yeah, but that does happen.
Oh, okay,
You know, he's only 17 at the moment.
Yeah,
so,
okay, yeah, no.
So no one's noticed anything yet.
Okay.
Okay. So he was sent to San Antonio, Texas, where he trained as a medic. He did well throughout his training and was soon sent to an army hospital in West Germany, and he earned his GED while he was there. In August 1962, Heidnik began to complain of severe headaches, dizziness, blurred vision and nausea. After seeing a hospital neurologist, he was diagnosed with gastroenteritis, and it was also noted that he was displaying symptoms of mental illness, and he was prescribed antipsychotic medication. So they found it, you know.
Okay.
It was first recorded.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Because that's good that he was in the army for him to go to a medical doctor there.
Yeah.
I suppose he would have possibly in the outside in the real world had just gone to a regular doctor if he had the headaches, I guess. And he still might have come across this. But that's a good diagnosis, you know.
I think it's better that he was in the army because at least he's gone a regular.
And they're used to PTSD and stuff.
Yeah.
They're used to different trauma-related mental illnesses.
But the thing is, this is 60s. They're not that great.
No, but I'm thinking they might be looking for certain things more than the regular doctor would.
Maybe.
So he might be lucky to have been in that situation to get that sort of attention and care.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Potentially.
Which is good. So I'm saying that's good. But in the end, ultimately, it doesn't matter. We wouldn't be sitting here today if great, he got medicated.
Totally.
That's the end of the podcast.
End of the story, Gary Heidnik.
Someone got some medication. Someone you don't know and you'll never know. No, it all goes seriously wrong.
It does. It all goes tits up soon enough. Right, okay. So in October 1962, he was transferred to a military hospital in Philadelphia, where he was assessed mentally and found to be suffering from schizoid personality disorder. Consequently, he was honourably discharged from the army. Okay, so I've just done a little bit about schizoid personality disorder, so you can kind of understand that a little bit.
Okay.
So it can manifest in people who suffer from the condition often have trouble establishing relationships, and they may seem indifferent towards other people. They often lack the understanding of how their own actions impact social situations, and they usually have a hidden sense of superiority. Sufferers often say that they have a feeling of watching life go by rather than playing an active role.
Right.
So that's how it can kind of come through. Shortly after he was discharged, he became a licensed practicing nurse and enrolled at the University of Philadelphia, only to drop out after the first semester.
That's
a pattern with him as well. If you didn't notice, when he enrolled in military school, he dropped out. Then he went back to normal school, dropped out.
But he is... It's funny, though, there's a part of him trying its best
to
be a fairly good citizen.
Yeah.
He's trying. He's actually getting off his arse and fucking going and doing it, doing the studying.
Yeah,
but then he's gone to
different schools and stuff, you know, all that training through the army, training to be a medic. There's a lot going on.
But to be fair, if he hadn't got the headaches, he'd probably still been in the military. He might have even worked his way up.
Yeah.
And might have not gone ahead and killed people. Because they might have caught, obviously, and seen if his mental illness. He stayed in the military and became really good. They'd probably catch it when he started going, and they'd probably go, oh, it's probably PTSD or whatever. But they might catch it quicker, where on the outside, when that happens, there's no one to catch it.
Yeah, maybe. He then took a job at a veterans hospital, but was fired soon after for poor attendance and rude behaviour to the patients. From August 1962 until his arrest in March 1987, Heidnik attempted suicide 13 times.
Wow.
I know.
That's a red flag.
I know.
That's 13 red flags.
Yeah, some of these ways are crazy as well, including driving his motorcycle into a truck. He attempted to hang himself. He smashed a light bulb and ate the glass. He overdosed on prescription meds, and one time he tied a string tightly around his big toe in the hope that it would give him gangrene, which would then spread through his system.
It's a little time consuming. You might sit there and go, I don't know if I want to do this now, actually.
Yeah, definitely. You've got to wait for your toe to drop off.
It's like, oh, shall I get some cheese on toast? That's just it's basically just fucking himself up left, right, and centre. It's almost like a comedy movie. Like
it's crazy, isn't it?
Skits.
That's well, that's kind of over the years. What was that? That's like 20-odd years, 25 years
worth of. So it's like right.
So that's nearly.
Fuck it.
That's kind of once every couple of years.
Right, fuck it. I hate my life.
Give it
right,
go.
I'm going for another go. Right. Fuck it. I haven't done that one. What's that toe? Because
yeah,
tie a string around my toe.
A light bulb and eating.
I'm eating a light bulb.
Okay.
It's a bizarre way to go because how's that
going to
kill you?
Very strange.
If you wanted to just do it though, surely there's ways you can do it. You can go up to the top of a building
I think
and just jump
you,
off,
if,
and then that's that.
If you were, committed to the idea,
tying the string around the toe seems to be.
Yeah.
What did he say that then? Investigating it later on or interrogating?
Yeah,
they say like, oh yeah, I tried to commit suicide. Tied a string around my big toe. So
maybe,
I've never.
Yeah.
Do you mean around your neck? No.
Unless there was hospital. Maybe there was hospital records or something.
It's just insane.
You know,
that's
when
the word,
gone
that's
in,
the
been admitted to hospital or something, it'd be like, yeah, it was a suicide attempt. So you just go back through his hospital records.
Yeah. I just find that that's a crazy one. I won't laugh at it because it's suicide. But
definitely, it's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, he was also in and out of psychiatric institutions throughout this time, including an admittance in December 1968 after he hit his brother Terry over the head with a wood plane.
Fuck you, Terry!
Which is like one of those big handheld things that you shave wood with. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know wood plane.
I'm trying to do an explanation for people who don't know what
okay.
it is. It's like a big
you'd
handheld.
You have two hands on it, a big bit of wood, and it
and
shaves
sort of
off wood.
You push
and
it down a wood thing, don't you? And a bit of wood will come off.
Well, you can get hand planes as well, where you just do it yourself.
Yeah.
Wood's in a vise, and you just sand it down.
Yeah.
But it's a very hard way of sanding it down because you're shaving it.
Yeah, definitely.
Essentially, but you're smoothing
it
off.
Done a go at it. It's hard work.
That's fun, though.
Yeah. It's pleasing. Okay.
I like woodwork, it's all right.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Very creative, artistic
I got kicked
thing.
Out of woodwork at school, though, at secondary school. And just playing up, not doing my work. He just told me to get out. He wouldn't let me come back in to do the exam. Oh, I'm quite sad about that. Sorry. Can't remember his name. That teacher that I had that time. Okay, he visited Terry in the hospital, who was understandably pissed off. Terry asked Gary, "What if you had killed me?" Gary thought for a moment, then said, "I would have put your body in the bathtub and poured acid over it. I'd leave you there to soak for 2 or 3 days. Then, if there were any large bones left, I'd saw them up and distribute them in trash cans around the neighbourhood." Terry would also spend time in psychiatric institutions throughout his life.
Running through the family?
Yes.
Okay. Old Tezza.
Yeah. In 1967, Heidnik bought a 3-story house and began to hang around the Elwyn Institute, which was a home for people with mental disabilities. In 1970, Ellen Heidnik, who was suffering the effects of alcoholism and had been diagnosed with bone cancer, committed suicide by drinking mercuric chloride.
Well, that's a way to go.
I know, right, so I've done a little
tangent. Better than a light bulb eating.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I've done a little tangent here. This was quite good, actually, because there's been lots of little tangents I've got to go off on. I was like, oh, I wonder what that is, you know, and obviously doing a bit about kind of schizoid personality disorder.
Yeah.
So, yeah, mercuric chloride. Apparently, it was common over the counter disinfectant in the early 20th century, which was recommended for everything from fighting measles to protecting fur coats and exterminating ants. It was also used to treat syphilis before the advent of antibiotics. However, there were frequent accidental poisonings and it was commonly used as a suicide method. It causes serious internal damage and death in under 24 hours, dependent on dose.
Oh, right. So they probably discontinued it because it was commonly known for suicide.
Yeah, it was a
anything we
you're
selling is commonly known for suicide should probably not
definitely.
Be sold.
So yeah, that got took off the shelves.
Yes. Okay.
In October 1971, Heidnik started his own church, the United Church of the Ministers of God, initially started with just 5 followers. and when he opened a bank account in the church's name in 1975, he deposited the first cheque of $1,500, but eventually he would amass $500,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it got quite rich.
Yeah, this is the thing with this guy. It's like, he has got drive. He's got determination.
Definitely.
He's trying to do shit.
Yeah.
He's trying to make moves.
Yeah.
That's why I find it quite interesting, really. And then all of a sudden, just like, this turns into just,
yeah, just
a mission of destruction and hell.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You're sort of almost going into Cole Panzram sort of mission of destruction territory.
Yeah.
It's like, what the shit? Yeah.
Okay, in 1976, he sold his house and bought another three-storied home. He rented out two of the floors and moved into the third with his mentally disabled girlfriend, Anne Jeanette Davidson.
And this is something that this particular fella finds, and it happens more and more common, is dating these mentally ill people, these ladies. Quite often, it's three or four. He dates, and it's just crazy to the point where he's actually taken them out of the institutes for day release.
Yeah,
just insane to do what he does and things. It's just,
well, yeah, that's why I read that bit at the beginning, you know, because it says that he surrounds himself with people of a low intelligence because he feels threatened by women with an equal intelligence to him, or you know, thereabouts.
But so this guy's fairly clever. Was he finding that?
Because they're vulnerable.
No, but I mean, was he finding ladies of the same intelligence as him regularly? Do you know what I'm saying? Do you know what I mean? I don't feel like he needs to be that threatened.
Well, I don't think, yeah, that's not, no, but I mean, like, people who are of a normal, average intelligence, maybe, you know, because they would see through the manipulation.
We're thinking street smarts, etc.
Yeah, definitely, like, you know,
someone
like me. Someone is going to see that, see the way he's behaving, probably, and think, well, you're trying to manipulate me. I'm not going to fall for it. But if for someone more vulnerable who's more disabled,
so that's what it is,
you know,
more than lack of intelligence, it's more of the social awareness.
Kind of critical thinking, you know, and being able to work out what his actions
situation.
Are. Yeah,
absolutely. Okay.
Okay, so there was an incident between Heidnik and one of the tenants of the buildings soon after. A man named Robert Rogers was living in one of the other apartments with his girlfriend. Heidnik got into an argument with Rogers' girlfriend and went down to the basement to turn off the power in retaliation. When Rogers came home, his girlfriend explained what had happened, and Rogers went down to the basement to turn the power back on. The basement door was locked, so he went outside and climbed in through a window. When he did, he was confronted by Heidnik, sitting on a dirty mattress and holding a rifle. Heidnik picked up a pistol that was on the floor and, aiming it at Roger's face, he said, "Now I've got you, I'm going to shoot you and say you were a burglar." He pulled the trigger, but luckily the bullet only grazed Roger's cheek. A week later, all charges were dropped, but records don't state the reason. Years later, after Heidnik sold the house, the new occupants noticed that a hole had begun to be dug in the basement.
Yeah. Which we're going to get to, the old Science of the Lambs.
Yeah, definitely.
That's what we can call that, the Science of the Lambs hole.
Yeah. Buffalo Bill hole. It's the lotion hole.
The dark Buffalo Bill hole. The lotion hole.
Around 1978, Anne Jeanette gave birth to a daughter named Maxine, who was immediately placed in foster care because obviously she wasn't capable enough to look after the baby, and nor was Heidnik. Shortly after this, Heidnik signed out Anne Jeanette's sister, Alberta. So it's going to get shitty from here on in. It's going to get, like, this is where it starts to get shitty.
Yeah,
so
it's here, isn't it? Yeah.
Steal yourself. If you're still with us, and if you feel like it's going to make you a bit wibbly, just leave it.
Yeah,
go
absolutely.
And have a cup of tea instead.
Yeah. It is here. This is the beginning, then.
Mm-hmm.
This is crazy. Like, he's done okay. He's done all right. He's amassed some money and stuff like that. And
yes, but he's got the religious shit going on now. You know, he's got the church. He's been doing the church for a bit. So we're in 1978 now, and he started the church in, like, 71. So he's been doing that for kind of 7 years, you know. I think potentially power is going to his head. Obviously, he's getting more money. is probably starting to feel like he can do whatever.
Power trip,
and he wants his children. You know, that's a ongoing theme with a lot of organised religion, isn't it? That you have a lot of wives, you have a lot of kids,
even like Manson type sort of thing. His family.
I don't know.
It's all women, though, isn't it? So yeah. It's not just family.
I'm not sure. I don't think that was really Manson's trip, was it? He just wanted to go out to the desert and fucking drive June buggies and stuff.
Play guitar.
Do loads of acid and fuck loads of women.
Yeah.
Really. And just kind of got all mad about it. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I don't know.
He was quite an angry man, wasn't he?
I wouldn't associate organised religion with Manson.
Yeah.
But obviously this is, you know, and I think a lot of serial killers do get the organised religion bent thing going on.
Which man's on about Marilyn Manson?
Oh, Brian, what happened to you?
Yeah.
Fuck's sake, I was thinking about him the other day. I was like, don't hear a word from him, do you, these days?
Nah.
Tried that terrible shit with fucking Kanye West and Justin Bieber and then like ducked out.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, get your coat, Brian. Yeah. You need to go home. Fuck's sake. Yeah, so I think, you know, you've got the organised religion thing going on now, so I think that's where it's starting to get mixed up. Schizoid personality disorder, sense of self-importance, organised religion, money, followers, power.
Power's the word.
So, yeah, I think that's where it's going. And then, obviously, less mentally...
Because his thoughts...
Quick
of, just
people, you know,
the weirdness
who aren't
of...
capable of the critical thinking. He's just going to get away with it. Shit's going to snowball because he's going to be like, well, if I can get away with that, can I get away with this?
Yeah.
You know, and just going to keep pushing it and pushing it to see how far he can go.
But it's crazy, though, to think about what he does, though. It's not like a really... mad intelligent way he's doing it. It seems to be a very spur of the moment. I'm just going to do this, build a hole, and yep, you're going in that hole.
Yeah.
Just what?
Yeah.
What was the long term plan? That's what it feels like. It should have been such a quick thing, and him getting caught.
Mm.
So it's just weird.
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
Quite a trip. All right, yeah, go for it. Tell us all.
Okay. So, shortly after this, Heidnik signed out Anjanette's sister, Alberta, on day release from the psychiatric facility where she lived, imprisoning her in his basement for days. After she was found and returned to the facility, examination revealed that she had been raped and sodomised and that she had also contracted gonorrhea. Heidnik was arrested and charged and convicted with kidnapping, rape, unlawful restraint, false imprisonment, involuntary deviant sexual intercourse and interfering with the custody of a committed person.
Yeah.
However, the original sentence was overturned on appeal and Heidnik only spent 3 years incarcerated in a psychiatric institution before being released in 1983. In 1984, he purchased his third house and carried on promoting his church. Also this year, he joined a dating agency.
Wow. What was that profile like?
I know. That specialised in women from the Philippines. And after a short while communicating by letter, Betty Disto moved to America and married Heidnik.
Should have been Betty Disco.
The marriage didn't last long, though, as Betty once walked in on Heidnik in bed with three other women.
Three?
Yep.
Not just one?
Three women.
I have you, and you.
In addition to forcing her to watch as he had sex with others, she eventually managed to leave him with the help of the local Filipino community, secretly giving birth to his son, Jesse John Disto.
Yeah, it's just the fact that she catches him like this, but then she knows that she's stuck. So she has to kind of stay with him.
Yeah, because she's come over from the fucking Philippines.
And sometimes cooking food for his lovers.
Yeah.
And cooking meals for them. And she's stuck, you know, she can't get out of it. Because what she could do, she's a legal immigrant.
Yeah. He's just come over here to get married.
And she's stuck. And he says that to her because apparently it's like 24 hours of love after marriage, it's all good. And that's it, boom, it's gone. She literally, 24 hours, catches him in bed with three other women. Wow!
That's crazy.
Wow!
That is bananas.
not even just one woman, yeah. but then going, this is how it is, and explaining that to her, and her going, great, this is, I don't have a choice.
Mm.
And she doesn't know how to speak the language or any other people, so she's like, what am I going to do? So she goes to the other local Filipinos around, yeah. and that's how she gets communicates about it. And they say to her, leave.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Obviously leave.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, they probably gave her advice and stuff.
I think it's knowing that you've got someone kind of, some backup, you know.
For, or someone giving
she
you...
feels like there's some backup for her, so that if she does leave, there are people that she can talk to and say, how can I get home, you know, or how can I fucking start again here if she wants to stay?
Just so at least she's communicate got that, in the same language.
Like a network, a support network.
But she was completely stuck, bless her.
Yeah,
she thought,
so
oh, brilliant, great, I'm going to America and, like, have this marriage and then just that. Like, what the shit?
What a fucking prick.
Mm-hmm.
So she secretly gave birth to Jesse John Disto, so Heidnik wasn't aware that she was pregnant, and he only found out afterwards when she contacted him to pay her child support. He was like, what? So that's another kid, you know, and this is where a part of the kid thing comes in.
Does he go along with
the
child support?
I'm not sure, actually. I'd fucking like to think so.
Almost seems like
he cash.
Yeah, but he's also a fucked person. Mm. He's completely fucked.
But this is where another aspect of the child wanting all the children thing comes in, I think, because obviously he had a child with Anjanette, didn't he, before Maxine, who was taken into care.
Yeah.
This one, you know, he's had another child here, but he's not getting any contact with that child either. It's out of his control. So all these children keep getting taken away from him.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of adds on to the wanting all the kids thing, you know.
Yeah, makes sense.
And also probably keeping them captive so that no one can take them.
It does go very much into the old Fritzl territory a bit.
I know, I was thinking that back when we were chatting a while ago and kind of saying, you know, it seems very impulsive that he's kind of gone, oh, I'm going to keep you down here. And I did think back to Fritzl, who was planning it out for like 20 years or some shit.
Yeah, totally different.
Building everything, you know. And not that it was great down there.
But Fritzl's pre-planning enabled him to keep that going for a long time. Mm.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's thought out and pre-planned, premeditated.
Yeah.
All right. But the similarities, obviously, is the caption and keeping women.
Yeah, it's the captive.
Just
captive.
What the fuck? But these guys had it worse than Fritzl's daughter. Well, no, she had a slight something down there.
But that was her actual father, for God's sake. So she was down there for like fucking 25 years or something.
That shit, but I mean, she had some ovens and stuff to cook with.
She had seven children. That was fucking terrible.
Then again, the way that this fella treats women and the way he does treat them, which we're going to find out what food their diet they're on down there, they wouldn't have been able to last for long anyway.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a human centipede.
Totally.
They're going to die soon.
Yeah.
You know, you can't. There's no nutrition in what you're feeding them.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it gets disgusting.
Okay, so Heidnik was becoming increasingly frustrated that his children were being kept from him, like I was just saying. So he hatched a plan to kidnap and hold captive a number of women who would bear children for him to bring up the numbers in his church. He went out in his car, and after haggling the price for business, he picked up sex worker Josefina Rivera. After Josefina had been in the car with Heidnik for a short time, she began to become suspicious. The car and Heidnik's watch, because I think he had a Rolls Royce.
Oh, sweet.
Did you hear anything
about
that?
No,
I think I meant to look into that more, actually, but I'm pretty sure he had a Rolls Royce.
Well, that's going to attract ladies of the evening.
I know, but yeah, like we'll go on to say, like, the car looks expensive, but he's a bag of shit.
That's not uncommon, dear.
I know. I suppose it's not
rich
actually.
Rich people, that is not uncommon at all.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah.
The car and Heidnik's watch look very expensive, but Heidnik himself looks scruffy and unkempt and was badly in need of a bath.
You'd be like, where the fuck have you just nicked this car from?
Yeah, totally. They arrived at Heidnik's house and he took Josefina up to the bedroom where he threw her a soiled $20 bill, undressed, and got into the bed.
A soiled?
Yeah, dirty.
A dirty $20 bill?
Dirty.
Sword with what?
I don't know. Duh.
So he threw in $20 and said, get in bed.
Yeah.
Get in bed.
When they'd finished, Josefina got up to get dressed, and as she was about to step into her jeans, she felt two strong hands grip her throat from behind and squeeze. Heidnik almost strangled her into unconsciousness before she managed to croak, okay, I'll do anything you want.
Oh no.
Heidnik released her neck, and as she fell to the floor, she noticed that he had handcuffed one of her wrists.
Shit.
Heidnik led her through the house and down to the cold and unfinished basement. He took her over to a stained mattress, bolting an exhaust clamp over each ankle, then feeding a length of chain through each of them, which he then attached to a pipe that came out of the wall, securing the whole thing with a padlock. When Heidnik had finished, he laid his head on her bare lap and went to sleep.
I know.
Creepy.
What is going on? And she's just like, so oh creepy. My God, the thoughts that she must be having. I can't move, I'm stuck, and the captive's there just asleep.
Yeah. Just laid down.
But I can't do a thing about it.
So creepy. When Josefina awoke, Heidnik had gone back upstairs. She looked around and saw that a patch of the concrete floor had been broken and the beginnings of a hole had been dug, which looked to be about the size of a bathtub. Heidnik brought food down to Josefina, but she was wary of the food being poisoned or laced with sedatives, so she refused to eat it. After Heidnik had taken the food back upstairs, he came back down with a pick and shovel and commenced digging the hole. While he dug, he told Josefina of his plan to keep the women there and to impregnate them all to make one big family. After an escape attempt, Heidnik put her in the pit that he'd been digging, then forced her head down to her chin by covering the hole with a plywood board, which was then weighted down with bags of dirt.
Yeah.
He brought a radio down to the cellar and cranked it up to full volume, leaving Josefina in the pit for 27 hours.
Yeah, so no neighbours couldn't hear her screaming or anything like that.
Yeah. On December 3rd, 1986, Heidnik abducted the mentally disabled Sandra Lindsay. When Heidnik had left them alone in the basement, Sandra told Josefina that she'd known Heidnik for about 4 years and that they had met when Gary was visiting the Elwin Institute. She said that he would pick her up and take her to McDonald's before bringing her back to the house for sex with him and his friend Tony.
It's like a fucking Jimmy Savile.
Yeah, definitely.
Situation with the hospitals.
Yeah.
Why was he allowed? He's already been arrested for this stuff.
I know.
What came from that arrest?
I'm not sure, actually.
He
got charged with it, didn't he?
Yeah, I thought it was a case of she didn't want to testify.
Oh, maybe.
And then he got away with it.
Oh, maybe, quite possibly.
I think that was what happened. Or she didn't turn up, or she just didn't want to do it.
Quite possibly, because the incident with him in the basement shooting that guy, or shooting at that dude, the charges got dropped for that one as well, didn't they?
We always find this with these people.
Yeah, and I think that gives them a sense of invincibility as well. They're not going to get any comeback for it.
Yeah, so they can keep pushing it and pushing it.
Yeah.
Because you're thinking, how is he still being able to just release these people from these hospitals?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
But
just
if it's not on his record because he didn't get charged.
Yep. Okay, so Gary's friend Tony as well is going to come back up in this couple of times. She told Josefina that she had become pregnant by Heidnik, but had been scared at the prospect of becoming a mother and had got an abortion. Heidnik had been infuriated by this and had offered her $1,000 to carry his baby, but she had refused.
Yeah.
She said that Heidnik had told her she was going to have his baby now, whether she liked it or not. One day, Sandra's sister came to Heidnik's door with two of her cousins looking for Sandra. They were known to Heidnik's friend Tony, who, although himself mildly developmentally disabled, knew that it was likely that's where Sandra would be. After they'd left, Heidnik took some paper and a pen down to the basement, where he made Sandra write a note saying, "To Mom, don't worry, I'll call," and told her to sign it. He told her he was going to send it from New York so that her family would think that she'd run away and nobody would come looking for her.
What, so he's going to go to New York himself?
Yeah, apparently so. I'm not sure if he ever did.
Right.
I can't imagine that he would have done. I'm sure he probably just went somewhere else, closer.
Yeah, probably.
It's probably quite a way away, I think. Okay, so the women were only permitted to wear a thin shirt, and Heidnik would feed them oatmeal, crackers, Pop-Tarts and white bread. Heidnik soundproofed the basement so the neighbours wouldn't hear the women screaming, and if they made any noise, he would beat them with the handle of a shovel. If they misbehaved in any way, they would be strung up to a hook in the ceiling, 7 feet off the floor.
Yeah.
And sometimes left there for days.
Yeah, there's that one lassie.
Yeah.
And her wrist, just from one wrist for the days. Just imagine.
Yeah, that would be
one
so painful.
One handcuff, your whole body weight for days.
Yeah, it's so painful.
With no
7 feet off
tortured.
The floor as well, so you're not even going to be able to touch the floor.
No, no. No,
that's literally it. That's so fucking
your
horrible.
Hand would go blue.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, it's awful.
Sandra's relatives periodically visited Heidnik's house, but never receiving an answer, they wrote it off as a dead end. However, Sandra's mother reported her as a missing person, telling the police that she may be a prisoner of a man named Gary, and gave his address and phone number. The investigating officer called and visited Heidnik's residence, but received no answer. He turned his attention to tracking down Heidnik's friend Tony, eventually finding him at a McDonald's in West Philadelphia. He asked him Gary's last name, but Tony spelt it incorrectly, and later, when the officer typed it into the computer, nothing was shown. However, had he been given the correct spelling, he would have seen Heidnik's 1976 arrest for aggravated assault and the charges for carrying a pistol.
Do we know what spelling he was given?
I think instead of spelling it, because it's H-E-I-D-N-E-I-K, I think he said it was N-A-I-K rather than E. So it was only one letter. I don't think it was like a hugely... like a misspelled name. Well, I think it was only like one or two letters.
Would the detective not like?
I know.
Just
surely
try a
you
couple
go,
of
right,
spellings just in case.
Maybe look for a name that's possibly
quite close.
It's only
like another 15 minutes.
I'm sure
work,
Heidnik's
surely.
Probably not going to be like an uncommon name.
No.
So you'd probably go, let's just try that. You
different
know, and
spellings
just go,
of
oh,
things, yeah. Just in
and
case.
And they've got, you know, if she's given them his phone number and his address.
Yeah.
Like, surely you put those two things together
but,
and then go...
But he's already gone there, though. And why didn't he wait for a bit longer rather than just go, oh, you're not in.
Or go back.
Or go find your mate.
If you've potentially got a girl tied up in your house, surely he's going to be like, right, I'm going to go back like 5-6 times. Sit outside in your car.
I was about to say
wait
case
for,
it
like,
outside.
Stake it out.
Yeah.
Get a pizza.
Have a little party.
Yeah, have a little surveillance party. I don't know if you want to be knocking one out in your car.
Pass the time.
Jizz on your pizza.
That's weird. But yes, you'd expect the detective to detect.
Mm. Yeah, I wouldn't go there one time and go, oh, he's not there, I'm not going to go back. I'd be like, dude, could have a girl in the basement, get investigated.
Are we being surprised that a detective is not possibly detecting? Because it does seem to happen with these cases, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And also, you know, let's think about these people who are victims here. You know, they're mentally disabled.
In their hospital may not be like a focus point for
their potential
them.
Sex workers, you know, their potential rough sleepers.
Just people that they're like, we don't
they're
really
people who they don't
put all the effort
give a
into.
Shit out. They're people of colour as well, you know,
yeah.
So they're...
You're not
they're
a rich white
these,
person.
All these things that the majority of police don't give a shit about,
yeah,
to be honest.
Unfortunately.
Yes. Okay, so where are we? Okay, on December 25th, Heidnik went out looking for another girl.
Christmas Day.
Don't have a day off, does he? It is Jesus' birthday, though. So makes it right in Heidnik's book.
I guess
so. Heidnik went out looking for another girl, and he spotted 19-year-old Lisa Thomas. He offered her a lift and she accepted, and he drove her to her friend's house and waited for her outside.
So it's going to be the Rolls which is making her go, yeah, all right, not him.
Yeah. He took her for some food afterwards and then back to his house. Lisa began to feel drowsy.
How's he got back to his house? Is she? Oh, she was a sex worker.
I don't think this one was a sex worker.
Was she? Yeah.
No.
So how's he got her back?
I think he just... quotation marks, charmed her
from eating.
I think
at
she
the
was
middle.
Quite young. She was like 19 years old.
He's
if
shown
I remember rightly, yeah.
He's shown a bit of money.
So I think he's probably flashed some cash. He's got the car. He's took her out for some food. You know, he's offered her a lift and whatever. So I think, yeah, she's probably, you know, he's probably gone, would you want to come back to mine? And she's probably gone, yeah.
He flashes the cash. She flashes the gash.
Yeah. Cash for gash. Can we get David Dickinson to present that?
Yeah.
Okay. Lisa began to feel drowsy after drinking some wine, and she dozed off. When she woke up, she was naked in Heidnik's bed. After they had consensual sex, Lisa reached for her clothes and asked Heidnik if he could give her a lift back to her friend's house. But Heidnik put his arm across her throat from behind and squeezed until she said that she would do whatever he wanted.
Repeated.
Yeah, it becomes his MO, doesn't it? It's just the same and same.
Well, he knows now that they're going to just go, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
You know, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. You know, it makes him successful, so he's going to carry on doing it.
Hmm.
He handcuffed her and dragged her to the basement, pulling her over to the pit and taking the wooden covering from the hole. Lisa was shocked as Josefina and Sandra climbed out. Heidnik was pleased with himself and promised the girls peanut butter and jelly sandwiches after he'd raped Lisa.
Wow, I'm pleased with myself.
Yeah.
I've done a rape.
Yeah, it's Christmas Day.
Do you want
Day.
Some sandwiches?
It's Christmas Day. When I've raped this girl, you can have some peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. The king is generous today.
Merry Christmas.
On January 2nd, 1987, Heidnik abducted 23-year-old Deborah Dudley, and a hierarchy began to evolve among the women, and Josefina was punished the least and was able to convince the other women to do as Heidnik asked. He enjoyed turning them against each other too, and when he left the house, he would leave one of them in charge. When he returned, that girl would be expected to inform on anyone that had misbehaved, and that girl would be punished, which was either thrown in the hole, beaten with the handle of a shovel, or handcuffed to the hook in the ceiling. Hmm. He also regularly humiliated them by making them eat dog food, and he would rape at least one of them each day while the others were made to watch.
Just absolute torture and just so
that's
vile.
It. Day in, day out, you know, fucking getting raped or made to watch rape and made to eat dog food and fucking
every day
crackers and
you'd be exhausted. You'd probably cried your eyes out. Dry as anything.
You've got to think about it, you know, as well. Obviously,
not eating
you're not
properly,
getting enough
no
water.
Sunlight.
Yeah, that's it.
Fresh
it's those
air.
Those things that fuck you
no
up
exercise.
So quickly.
Yeah,
you know, your body
torture.
Turns to shit.
Yeah,
it does.
It
only take a few days or to a week before your muscles will start wasting. You know, you're not going to be able to hold yourself up to stand up. And
especially
fucking,
without eating, and that's
yeah, definitely, and no sunlight
mentally,
and stuff. Yeah,
it's going to fuck you up.
Yeah,
so you're
totally.
Just going to be weak as anything.
Yeah,
that's the sort of thing. You get might have these chances of getting away and find out you can't do it because you just don't have the strength. You know?
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
And that's ultimately what they want to do. They just make you so weak you start like that.
Quickest way to break someone, isn't it? Withhold food and sleep.
Oh god, yeah. Don't do it to me.
Ah, no, don't do it to me either. You stop me getting kipping. Jesus Christ, I'll be alright with the food because I just resent that. It's just a pain. But yeah, the sleep. Don't stop me sleeping.
Yeah.
Okay, so on January the 18th, Heidnik abducted Jacqueline Askins and she joined the girls in the basement. On February the 7th, Heidnik became angry with Sandra Lindsay for sliding the board off the hole and decided to punish her by hanging her by one of her wrists from the hook in the ceiling for 2 days. She developed a high fever and the other girls could see that she was seriously unwell. The next morning, Sandra had slumped, and when Heidnik came down and unlocked the handcuffs, she fell on the floor, unmoving. When Heidnik checked for a pulse, he couldn't find one.
And that was the girl who'd been hanging from her wrist,
yeah.
No wonder. What do you expect?
Yeah, definitely. Because it's not going to take long to get ill down there either. You know, your immune system's going to be fucked.
Yeah, and that's going to take the last bit of energy or strength you have hanging from just one wrist. Fucking, yeah. You just imagine it, people. Just imagine that happening.
Yeah.
Horrible.
He dragged her body upstairs, and concerned that dumping her body may lead to DNA evidence being traced back to him, he dismembered her body with a power saw.
And the others are downstairs.
And they can hear it.
And they can hear it.
Yeah.
You just known it's all gone quiet for a while, and known that it's died, and all of a sudden...
Yeah, because they obviously know what's
that
happened.
He's been chopping her up, and it must be, like, at that moment, like... Is this just a nightmare?
Yeah.
Am I waking up from this? Is this a horror movie? I mean, because that is a horror movie. It's so severe.
The progression of it, like putting yourself in that place as well. You know, obviously you've been down in the basement. Obviously, it's been bullshit because he's been putting you in the hole. He's been raping you. He's raping these other women. But the progression of that, the fact that that girl's now died.
Now
you know,
death's involved.
And he is upstairs dismembering her.
Meaning he does not give a fuck.
That's kind of like...
You might likely die.
Everything, all bets are off now, wouldn't they? Yeah, anything could happen. So it must be so fucking frightening.
And he's there just giving them all gonorrhea. Was it gonorrhea?
Yeah, that other girl got gonorrhea.
So he's just giving that to them all as well.
I'm sure he didn't do much about sorting that shit out.
Of course not.
I'm sure they've all got STDs and fucking all sorts of
shit. Is it syphilis that works into the brain?
Yeah.
Not gonorrhea, though.
I think gonorrhea is quite bad, but I think syphilis is worse, and that's the one where your face rots off. That's the one Al Capone had.
Wow.
Okay, so yeah, he put her head in a cooking pot on the stove and cut the rest of the body into pieces, feeding some to his dogs and some to the women in the basement without their knowledge.
Mixing, basically, also at times, dog meat and human meat together.
Yeah, dog food.
Dog food
and human meat. And
that was the one that made me go, wow, this is a full-on dude.
Yeah, definitely.
Ugh.
A day or so after this, Heidnik's neighbours complained to the police about the horrendous smell emanating from Heidnik's house. Officers went to investigate, and Heidnik successfully fobbed them off by telling them that he'd burnt some meat he was roasting, apparently. Again,
what are these policemen
again,
doing?
You've only
one
got
of
to,
you?
Only got to look at the Jeffrey Dahmer case to see what these policemen were doing.
Policemen
just didn't want to do their job back in the day,
I guess. Because just one of you just needs to go, right, okay, all right, thanks for that. Go back to school and go, yeah, that's bullshit. I'm going to go around the back. I'm just going to have another little look.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to...
Just go in his fucking house. You're the police. Just
true.
Go, can we come in and have a look around?
But you can say no, and it's a whole thing.
We'll go and get a fucking warrant. I would.
You can't get a warrant for a smell.
Suspicious meat on this man's property.
I want to go and have a look.
Well, I want to go and look at his suspicious meat.
But then again, if they looked into the backstory...
I will.
Fuck off, you're looking at me. If they just looked into his backstory a bit more...
Yeah.
They would have known, like, oh, this motherfucker's... This is actually possible.
Yeah.
We've had enough thing. Let's add all these little things together now and go, yeah, this isn't right.
This is it, you know.
But
I know.
His wealth, does that mean that they have to, because they're
and
like,
the
oh God,
he might
complain at us, and he's got money.
Yeah, maybe. That could come into it. Because I was going to say, like, I know we're obviously in kind of 80s-ish now, but I would have thought that the communication would have been a bit better, because surely they would put two and two and two together and go, well, that woman gave us...
That's what
the
I'm
name
saying
Gary.
To you.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. All of these things, put it all together, and it should make you easily go, oh, yeah.
It's not like the days of the Yorkshire Ripper, is it, where everything was on cards
paper.
And fucking stuff like that.
You can have a basic database.
Yeah. So it just seems weird that they hadn't put that together.
Again,
they should have gone and looked anyway.
Again,
ridiculous.
You're saying laziness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Heidnik began to become increasingly paranoid that the women in the basement were plotting against him. I don't know what he thinks they're going to fucking do.
But
Jesus.
But the next day the smells could still be there. The neighbours could just be like, right, that's a rat place again. The smell's still there.
Yeah.
He's not continuously burning meat.
Yeah.
Can you please, you know... But then it gets a smell. How much of that can you actually go to the police? Do they say, look, it's a fucking smell, get over it?
They probably did, yeah. They probably did phone the police again. And the police were like, yeah, we'll get round to it. You know, like we spoke about on the Urban Legends thing last time. It took them 2 days to get to that Candyman murder woman after she phoned the police, you know. So they're probably like, yeah, we'll get round to it, you know. Fucking as if we're going to go and investigate some weird smell. Dude says he's burnt his dinner, fucking whatever.
I guess.
Okay, where am I? So, yeah, Heidnik began to become increasingly paranoid that the women in the basement were plotting against him, and when Josefina told him that the others were planning to attack him and escape, he decided to deafen the girls so they would be less aware of his presence, thus making escape more difficult. He did this in quite possibly one of the worst ways you could ever imagine, because it makes me absolutely fucking cringe.
This is just insanity now. The fact that he's now getting paranoid.
Yeah.
And then this is things like, oh, I know what I can do.
Yeah.
I'll take their hearing away.
That's what I mean. It's dangerous, because now it seems like he's getting into some kind of psychosis thing, you know, and he's becoming paranoid. So, yeah, things are getting much worse.
You can't imagine he's sitting there having his 5 fruit and veg a day.
Oh, no, he's not doing the regular
thing.
Going
30 minutes for a jog.
Yeah. Not getting his 10,000 steps in.
No.
So, yeah, he drove a screwdriver into their ears, bursting their eardrums.
Oh, God,
Oh, it's awful. I don't like anything with screwdrivers. Josefina was spared this torture, though, and she had become Heidnik's second in command in return for special privileges, such as occasionally being allowed upstairs to watch a movie or to be raped in a more comfortable environment.
Would you like the bedroom to be raped in?
And would you like a cushion?
But this, unfortunately, this goes along with the other victims that are still downstairs later on thinking and saying, testifying, or their own opinion, that this second-in-command as such is a second-in-command and is just as guilty as him. Don't they get to that point where they think this?
Yeah, because we had a little conversation about this, didn't we, the other week when we were chatting about it, and it was kind of like, you know, in a way you can kind of understand it in order for her to work up some kind of trust with him, you know, and get a way out for her and for the other girls. But in some of the girls' testimonies I've read, they said that she actually enjoyed it, you know.
Yeah, and at times and coaxed him into it. Doing stuff.
So yeah, it was kind of hard to say where her loyalty lay with that at that point in time.
Yeah.
It's quite a weird position that she had there. Okay, so yes, he did that. Heidnik began to use electrocution as a form of punishment, and he stripped the covering from an extension cord, then plugged it into the socket, using it to shock the women.
Just even worse.
Yeah, definitely. So he used to shock their chains, I think.
Yeah, run it through so it all went through all of them.
Deborah Dudley was one of the women who misbehaved, in quotation marks, most often. Heidnik took her upstairs one day, and when she came back down to the basement, she was quiet and solemn. Later, Josefina asked her what had happened, and Deborah told her that Heidnik had shown her Sandra's head in a pot and her ribs in a roasting pan, along with some other body parts in the freezer. She said he'd told her that she would end up that way too if she didn't start behaving. However, Deborah was only temporarily subdued, and she was soon on the receiving end of another punishment from Heidnik. He told Josefina to fill the pit with water from a hose, then he threw Deborah in there, placing the lid on top. He had previously drilled holes through the top of the lid, and through one of these holes, Heidnik poked the live extension cord, touching the water and electrocuting Deborah. She screamed for him to stop and said that he was killing her, but Heidnik continued the torture until she fell silent. He threw the lid off and pulled her from the pit, and when he checked for a pulse, he couldn't find one.
Yeah, she's dead.
Yeah. Heidnik went upstairs, and when he returned, he had a sheet of paper and a pen, which he passed to Josefina. He then made her write, sign and date a confession to say that she had been complicit in the murder of Deborah Dudley.
Wow.
Which he then told her he would show the police if she ever tried to escape or alert anyone. He unlocked her shackles for the first time in 4 months and told her to go upstairs and put on a clean shirt and a pair of pants.
Why?
Because she's going to be his helper now.
Right.
And his weird girlfriend type person.
Kind of a reverse Stockholm syndrome.
I don't know if it's reverse. But yeah,
he's coming on to one of the hostages, his people, he's making her, he's feeling more closer to her as well.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
He must be.
Yeah, I suppose. He's making her be his girlfriend and helper.
Yeah, so he's feeling closer to this one. Was she the original?
Yeah, she was the first one.
Right.
He left Deborah's body on the basement floor. In the morning, he wrapped it in plastic and put it in the freezer, knowing that he would need to dump it in the next few days when he found a suitable spot. Over the next few days, Heidnik began to treat Josefina more like a girlfriend. He took her on errands most days and would take her to eat at McDonald's.
Yeah, imagine that. Yeah, you're sitting there having food with this dude.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? Can I have a burger? It's not human meat and dog meat.
Yeah.
Amazing. I can have McDonald's meat.
Which is still just about as mystery meat as it gets. One day they drove out to the New Jersey Pine Barrens and Heidnik decided it would be as good a place as any for dumping Deborah's body, so they returned to the house. Heidnik ordered Josefina to spread a blanket on the floor, then fetch Deborah's body from the freezer and wrap it up.
Then get the body and bring it back, and you just go over and you have to pick a body out, a dead body, and just...
Yeah.
Wow.
Then they carried her to the car and drove back to the Pine Barrens. The next day, Heidnik and Josefina got in the car and went to look for a girl to replace Deborah.
Is she, though, Josefina, is she at this point every time thinking, when do I do this? When do I run? When
I would say
fuck?
So, yeah. Everyone, I'd say you're probably trying to work out some kind of routine.
She must be like...
probably trying to work out his routine and stuff and trying to find a viable... situation to nick off, I suppose.
She must be like getting his loyalty more and more, just
doing
whatever he wants.
They met 24-year-old Agnes Adams, who Josefina knew from when they both worked at a local strip club. She was now a sex worker, and Heidnik proceeded to negotiate a price with her. She got in the car and they drove back to Heidnik's house. He gave Josefina the key and told her to lock up while he took Agnes upstairs. When he and Agnes had had sex, he performed his usual chokehold until she complied, handcuffed and dragged to the basement. Afterward, Heidnik said to Josefina, "That was easy. We can do the same again tomorrow." But Josefina already had a plan of her own in mind.
Well, so it seems like we're great. We can get another woman to do it again tomorrow.
Yeah.
How many women are down there now?
It's got six altogether now, I think, because she was the last one he gets.
At least,
he
if
wanted
anything,
ten.
Even though they're
he
most
wanted
of them
ten,
are deaf,
didn't he?
At least they've got each other. Some, if there's any comfort, at
I
least
suppose.
They can slightly, like, what the fuck, I don't know, he must, yeah.
I suppose it's yeah, there's got to be
gonna,
some
there's
going
to be some sort
it.
Of bond to it. There's got to be, yeah, but they might all be deaf, though, by now.
Mm.
Oh, wow.
On March the 24th, 1987, Josefina asked Heidnik's permission to visit her family. Heidnik was initially reluctant, but possibly thinking that she was under the influence of Stockholm Syndrome, like we were talking about earlier, where hostages develop a bond with their captor, and knowing that he had the signed confession for helping murder Deborah, that's in quotes, he agreed on the condition that she would pick up another woman for Heidnik before she came home, meeting Heidnik at the gas station at midnight, where he would pick them both up. Heidnik dropped Josefina off near her family home, but as soon as he drove away, she walked to her boyfriend's apartment and told him what had happened.
Imagine that!
And that he needed to phone 911.
Where have you been?
Yeah, can you imagine if you hadn't seen me for a bit and then I rocked
months
up and be like,
months.
This dude,
where have you been?
I've been in this dude's basement. You like, bullshit.
Yeah, right. Like, wow. And just like, so this guy, like the boyfriend, he's going to be like angry as shit. He's going to be like,
yeah,
right, we need
totally.
To get the police involved. Like,
yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah, well, the story said that apparently he wanted to obviously go and beat up.
Do it himself.
Yeah, do it
absolutely.
Himself.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would be exactly the same, dear.
Okay, so when the officers arrived after they phoned 911, they saw the chafing on Josefina's ankles and wrists from the chains, which obviously lent her unbelievable story some credence.
And she's not been, and no one's seen her for months and months.
Yeah, totally.
Come on.
Yeah. The officers went to the gas station. This girl had kids as well, I think, you know, who hadn't seen her. She'd just disappeared.
Right. And they must now, the police go, right, surely now there's enough.
Yeah, definitely.
For us to go, right, there's actually something really bad going on here.
Well, the officers went to the gas station at midnight where Heidnik was going to pick up Josefina in Josefina's place and arrested Heidnik. They also arrested Heidnik's friend, Tony Brown, who we spoke about earlier.
Bloody Tony.
Though he was released on $50,000 bail and an agreement that he would testify against Heidnik. In part, he admitted that he had seen the death of Sandra Lindsay and that he had seen Heidnik dismember the body. Shortly after his arrest, Heidnik attempted to commit suicide in his cell but was rescued. At his arraignment, he claimed that the women were already in the house when he moved in.
They were already there. I didn't know what to do. So I just decided to start raping them and feeding them dog food. I didn't know what else to do.
Moved into this house and there were six women chained up in the basement.
Already there.
Can you believe it?
It's like a welcoming gift.
Oh my God, some people get a fruit basket.
A bottle of wine.
He got six chained up women in the basement.
I didn't know. I thought of ringing the cops. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to keep them.
Yeah.
They came in the house. I bought the house.
Yeah, they're mine. That's it. Fuck's sake. The defence attempted to prove that he was insane, but this was rebutted due to the fact that his church had amassed such a fortune. Like we were saying earlier, he's quite savvy. Financially,
he's a savvy businessman.
Financially knowledgeable.
Yeah, just a fucking loon.
Yeah, definitely.
Just, what the fuck?
On July the 1st, 1988, Heidnik was convicted of 2 counts of first-degree murder, 6 counts of kidnapping, 5 counts of rape, 4 counts of aggravated assault, and 2 counts of involuntary deviant sexual intercourse. He received a cumulative sentence of 150 to 300 years, and he was also sentenced to death. He was then incarcerated at Pittsburgh State Correctional Institution. In January 1989, he attempted suicide again, this time taking an overdose of prescription thorazine. In 1997, Heidnik's daughter Maxine and his ex-wife Betty filed for a stay of execution on the grounds that Heidnik was not competent enough to be executed. But on July the 3rd, 1999, this was denied by the court. Gary Heidnik had his last meal on July the 6th, 1999. And do you want to have a guess what it was?
Mashed potato.
He actually had 2 cups of black coffee and 4 slices of pizza. And he was executed.
What pizza?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. But it's bloody pineapple.
Do you reckon? Yeah. I reckon it was anchovy. Disgusting. And he was executed at 10 p.m. by lethal injection.
Good. Going back to...
Yes.
The fact that they go to catch him at midnight and they arrest him.
Yep.
He wasn't obviously not expecting that and they arrest him. Did they then immediately go to the house? They must have
they
done.
They must have
because
done.
Because if
I
they feel... Could you not find
I
any
I couldn't find any information
that?
About them going back to the house
because
and kind of
that,
discovering the girls and releasing
I know,
them,
because
you know?
I'd love to... That's your movie. That's your.
Yeah,
that's
totally.
The end of your movie where the women are in there and they're just about to die and the light opens up. Oh, no, it's him. Oh, no, it's him. It's so bright light they can't see.
Yeah.
And it's the cops.
Yeah.
And it's that satisfying moment that they're captured. That must have been... They must have been like... Wow, we're getting out of here.
Yeah.
But like we said earlier, though, in the court and that, they did actually say that they felt like that other lady was part blame.
Yeah.
Do you mention her again? Does she get anything going on?
No, that's your lot. Nothing ever happened to her. Not that I know of.
Because, like, it is a bit sketchy. You're in some grey territory there.
Yes, very.
Because she has done some criminal behaviour, but obviously they're going to say, "Well, she was made to do it."
Mm.
So basically, he actually even been on death row. It actually happened.
Yeah,
we hear of all these death row people just there until they just died naturally.
Yeah, he actually got executed.
And good.
Yeah.
But wow, this dude.
Yeah, crazy, crazy story, isn't it? Really?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's just such a crazy. When I looked into it, I was just like, "What the fuck?" It was like Spinal Tap's amplifier. It went to 1 to 11.
Yeah, definitely.
In no time whatsoever. Totally.
Yeah.
Well, this one goes to 11.
I know. It makes me think of the Chicago Ripper Crew episode.
God, cutting
tits off with piano wire and stuff.
Christ.
That was like extra, weren't it?
Yeah,
that was such an extra fucking story.
Yeah. Oh, I know it's going to be a normal psychopath and it's going to get that little extra.
So yeah, that was crazy. Yeah. Similar kind of length, wavelength.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was that fella there, old Gary.
Hardnick.
Surprised though that there's not been anything more on him. So,
yeah,
but you know, you never know. We might have influenced Netflix because I'm sure they're listening.
Yeah, come on Netflix. Spying on us.
Probably
spying on us.
Absolutely. Well, that was a crazy one.
Yeah.
That was just, you know, that's a full on, that's a gnarly ride.
Yes.
I just so shocked. And it's just like, so if we go back in time, if he never had that head injury, probably wouldn't have happened.
No, I think it would have done because he had mental illness.
Yeah,
the head injury didn't give him a schizoid personality disorder.
Yeah, but he started getting the headaches later on and stuff like that. Was that not from, I suppose it was a year, I suppose that was probably like 13 years later, I guess, from the head injury actually happening.
Yeah.
So you think it's just the mental illness creeping in, it's going to be what done it?
I don't think the head injury helped, you know?
No.
And maybe with the bullying as well, you know, indirectly.
Yeah.
Had something to do with it too. But I don't think that was like the main catalyst. I think that there was mental illness, you know, and I think potentially he would have gone on to do something. Maybe not that bad, but maybe something.
Why go on to just think his MO being and women of colour as well, not know any white, it's all sort of African American ladies.
Yeah.
Just those tortured, kept as a potential victim of women he could just sexually abuse and rape. Strange that he would go that way. It's torture and rape. He'd go that way rather than say a serial killer or someone goes and breaks into homes or like, not a stalker or whatever like that. Just being his thing. Such a weird thing to go that way.
That was his plan, wasn't it? You know, because he wanted them to populate the church. So that was his
and
whole
just
thing.
And craziness in his mind made him go, I know how to do it. We can make a family and I'll just be the father of all.
Yeah, and like I was saying, you know, the kids getting taken away from him and never being able to see them and stuff like that. You know, it's all ingredients into what actually made him, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
Having kids that he could keep that were his that weren't going to get taken away from him, and also having the kids to populate the church and kind of grow the numbers of the church and make him bigger and better.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I'm sure he probably just had a proclivity for ladies of colour. But you know, and the mental disability was all to make himself feel better and feel more intelligent and, you know, they're obviously more vulnerable. Well, sex work as well, you know, more vulnerable. The police don't really care about them. Their families probably don't give too much of a shit about them.
I just wondered where the influence came from. Where someone like Fred West, him being his dad, telling him, saying to him, like, you know, it's your right to women of in the family, take advantage and do whatever you want. And him doing that. He thinks it's his right. I was just wondering where he got this from, but I guess it was... Do you know what I mean? The mental illness coming into it and then opening up the door for whatever torture, pain, or whatever the evil thing he's going to do. And he chooses those things, the torture, rape, and cow. I just wonder why he went that route.
Mm.
But you say they're obviously starting a family in church. Kind of makes sense. They can't get away. He can do that. And in his own little way, that's the correct thing to do to start a family.
Yeah.
Bonkers.
Yes. Very strange.
Right. Well, there we go.
Yeah. So that's that one.
Episode 56, ladies and gentlemen. Next time.
Yeah.
It's my choice.
Yep.
It gets a little more light-hearted.
It is. There's not going to be any rape or murder in that one.
No.
I don't think.
No, we don't know yet, though, do we? But we're going time-travelling.
We are. We're doing time travel.
we're going to talk about time travel, and we're actually going to talk about a certain case, and I'm sure there'll be a few other little cases, and just the weirdness of time travel. I find it fascinating.
Yeah, well, we're going to do John Titor is the case, and that was suggested to us by a lovely listener, Justin Alba. Thank you very much for that. And we're also going to do a little bit of a chat about like the Philadelphia experiment as well, aren't we? Because I find that super interesting as well. But I'm not going to bend my brain doing like a massive deep dive into that one. But we will be doing a chat on the Philadelphia experiment because I find that one really good.
I think it's my co-host on the podcast on Horde Hill, a horror show that I do, podcast show. My co-host, my Mr. buddy Bone. There, Mr. Bone Dan, I think he is telling me that they've recently developed a small portal which they think you could possibly use a time travel, like a really small version or something, or the basics of it.
Okay, we'll have to look into that then.
Yeah, fairly recently, which just seems like don't kind of do it.
So we'll give you the guff. Give you the guff on that next time.
I might be wrong. It might just be a black hole. But then again, I feel like black holes could have you know, time travel implementation.
Event horizon.
No.
Oh.
Anyway,
we'll get sucked into Sam Neill's bloody doorway.
If you want crocheted Sam Neill being sucked into a doorway, you can get a hold of you, can't you?
You can come and talk to me. That's what you can do.
Where's that?
You can find me on Etsy at Foxy's Fabrication 79, or you can hit me up on the socials at Foxy's Fantastic Fabrications.
Indeed.
You can find me on Baphomet as well.
And do check out old Deadbolt Films on YouTube, where we've got a few short films, a few things. We got a new short film coming we're going to start doing this year in a few months. We're going to start a crowdfunding campaign for that, but it's going to be a fun one. But I'll say about that when the campaign's going, because we do need people to try and fund us. That's brilliant.
Okay, so if you liked us, give us a share, tell your friends, come and fill up our stars on Spotify, and we're always open for episode suggestions, aren't we? You can get in touch with us on the socials if you've got anything you'd like us to do an episode on.
Indeed. Thank you very much. Come again. Share and like and subscribe, etc.
And review and all that stuff.
Thank you very much. Come again next time. And remember to lock those doors, lock those windows,
safe.
Look under the bed, look in the cupboard, look in the loft hatch. It could be, who's it? I was about to say Nick Nolte. It's not Nick Nolte, is it? Who's it up there?
Gary Busey.
Gary Busey might be up in
your
loft.
Hider in the House. Oh. Have you seen Hider in the House?
If you haven't seen it, watch that. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Bye.